Poncho's sleeping, Amanda said, before Dan could ask. We'll be making rendezvous with 114, and she glanced at one of the screens. 73 minutes. I'll wake her in half an hour. Can we see the rock yet? Dan asked, peering into the black emptiness beyond the windows. Telescopic view, said Amanda, touching a view screen. A lumpy, roundish shape appeared on the screen. To Dan, it looked like a partially deflated beach ball, dark gray, almost black. We're getting excellent data on it, Fuchs said. Mass and density are confirmed. It's porous, as you thought? Yes, it has to be. It's certainly no beauty, Amanda said. I don't know about that, replied Dan. It looks pretty good to me. In fact, I think I'll call it Haven.
Haven,
she echoed. Dan nodded. Our haven from the storm. Silently, he added, if those numbers for its density mean what Fuchs says they do.
Cellini.
The worst part of being alone in the temporary shelter was the waiting. There was nothing to do in the tempo except pace its length, an even dozen strides for Chris Cardenas, or watch the commercial video broadcast that the shelter's antenna pulled in from the relay satellite. Maddening. And there was the high-tech sarcophagus in the middle of the floor, with its frozen woman inside its gleaming stainless steel cylinder. Not much company. When the hatch in the floor suddenly squeaked open, Cardenas jumped with surprise so hard she nearly banged her head on the shelter's curving roof. For an instant, she didn't care who was coming through the hatch. Even an assassin would be a welcome relief from the boredom of the past night and day. But she puffed out a big sigh of relief when she saw George Ambrose's brick-red mane rising through the open hatch. George climbed through and grinned at her. Den says I should take you to Stavanger. Cardenas nodded. Yes, fine. Doug Stavanger was not happy to see her. He sat behind his desk and eyed her with raw disappointment showing in his expression. Cardenas sat in the cushioned chair before the desk like an accused criminal being interrogated. George stood by the office door, beefy arms folded across his chest. You seeded Randolph's ship with gobblers? He said, his voice hollow with shocked disbelief. Specifically tailored to take apart copper compounds, Cardenas admitted, feeling shaky inside. Nothing more. Isn't that enough? It was meant to cripple the ship's radiation shield, she said defensively. Once they found out about it, they'd abort their mission and return here. But they didn't find out about it until they were deep in the belt, Stavanger said. George added, and now they're sailing into a Fukan radiation storm without a shield. This could become a murder, Stavanger said. Four murders. Cardenas bit her lip and nodded. And Humphreys was behind this scheme, Stavanger said. It was a statement, not a question. He wanted Randolph's mission to fail. Why? Ask him. He's a major investor in the project. Why would he want it to fail? Ask him, she repeated. I intend to, said Stavanger. He's already on his way here. As if on cue, Stavanger's phone chimed. Mr. Humphreys here to see you, said the phone's synthesized voice. Send him in, Stavanger said, touching the stud on the rim of his desk that opened the door. George stood aside, clearly glowering through his beard, as Humphreys walked in. Humphreys looked at Cardenas, half turned in her chair, then at Stavanger. With a slight shrug, he took the other chair in front of the desk. What's this all about? He asked casually as he sat down. What's going on? It's about attempted murder, Stavanger said. Murder? Four people are caught in a solar storm out in the belt without a working radiation shield. Dan Randolph, you mean? Humphreys almost smiled. That's just like him, barging ahead like a bull in a china shop. Stavanger bristled. You didn't get Dr. Cardenas here to seed Randolph's ship with gobblers? Gobblers? Nanomachines. Disassemblers. Humphreys glanced at Cardenas, then said to Stavanger, I asked Dr. Cardenas if there was any way that Randolph's ship could be... disabled slightly. Just enough to get him to turn back and abort his flight to the belt. Cardenas started to reply, but Stavanger said heatedly, If they die, if any one of them dies, I'll have you arraigned for premeditated murder. Humphreys actually smiled at Stavanger. That's so far-fetched, it's ludicrous. Is it? I had Randolph's ship sabotaged so he would abort his flight and come back to Cellini. I admit to that. Any sane man would have turned around and headed for home as soon as he found the sabotage, but not Randolph. He pushed on anyway, knowing that his radiation shield was damaged. That's his decision, not mine. If there's a crime in this, it's Randolph committing suicide and taking his crew with him. Stavanger barely held on to his composure. His fist clenched, he asked through gritted teeth, And just why did you want to sabotage his ship? So the stock in Astro Corporation would drop. Why else? It was a business decision. Business. Yes, business. I want Astro. The lower its stock, the easier for me to buy it up. Dr. Cardenas here wanted her grandchildren. I offered to get her together with them in exchange for a pinch of nanomachines. Gobblers, Stavanger said. They weren't programmed to harm anyone, Cardenas protested. They were specifically set to attack the copper compound of the superconductor. Nothing more. My father was killed by gobblers, Stavanger said, his voice as cold and sharp as an ice pick. Murdered. That's ancient history, Humphrey scoffed. Please don't bring your family baggage into this. Visibly restraining himself, Stavanger stared at Humphreys for a long, silent moment. Electricity crackled through the office. George decided that if Stavanger came around the desk and started beating up on Humphreys, he would keep the door closed and prevent anyone from coming to the bastard's aid. At last, Stavanger seemed to win his inner struggle. He took a shuddering breath and said in a low, seething voice, I'm turning this matter over to Cellini's legal department. Neither of you will be allowed to leave Cellini until their investigation is finished. You're going to put us on trial? Cardenas asked. If it were up to me, Stavanger said, I'd put the two of you into leaky spacesuits and drive you out into the middle of Mare Nubium and leave you there. Humphreys laughed. I'm glad you're not a judge. And by the way, Cellini has no capital punishment, does it? Not yet, Stavanger growled. But if we get a few more people like you here, we'll probably change our laws on that point. Humphreys got to his feet. You can threaten all you like, but I don't think your courts will take this as personally as you are. With that, he strode to the door. George stepped aside and let him open it for himself. He noticed that there was a thin sheen of perspiration on Humphreys' upper lip as he left the office. The instant the door closed again, Cardenas broke into sobs. Half doubled over in her chair, she buried her face in her hands. Stavanger's icy composure melted. Chris, how could you do it? How could you let him? He stopped and shook his head. Without looking up at him, Cardenas said in a tear-choked voice, I was angry, Doug, angrier than you can know, angrier than I myself knew. Angry? At Randolph? No, at them. The crazies who let this greenhouse cliff ruin the world. The fanatics who've exiled us, who won't let me come to Earth to see my children, my grandchildren. And they won't come here, not even for a visit. I wanted to punish them, get even with them. By killing Randolph? Dan's trying to help them, she said, looking up at him at last, her face streaked with tears. I don't want them helped. They made this mess. They shut me out of their lives. Let them stew in their own juices. They deserve whatever they get. Stavanger shook his head, bewildered. He handed Cardenas a tissue and she dabbed at her reddened eyes. I'm going to recommend that you be placed under house arrest, Chris. You'll be able to go anywhere in Cellini, except the nanotech lab. She nodded wordlessly. And Humphreys? George asked, still standing by the door. Same thing, I suppose. But he's right, the smug slime bag. We don't have capital punishment. We don't even have a jail here in Cellini. House arrest for him would be a lark, George said. Davenger looked disgusted. But then his chin came up and his eyes brightened.